Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Now, long before COVID, there was the pandemic of HIV, then a fatal condition, but one that was all too often associated with stigma, judgment, or often indifference. Today is World AIDS Day, and we're joined on News Talk by Executive Director of HIV Ireland, Stephen O'Hare. Good afternoon, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Has this pandemic affected transmission rates of HIV, or do we even know if that's the case?
Well, that's a good question. The Health Protection Surveillance Centre publishes information on the number of newly notified HIV infections in Ireland every year. And what we saw in 2020, which is the most recent year for data that we have, is a fall off in the number of newly notified HIV cases. And in any other year, that will be a cause for optimism, because we are trying to eliminate HIV transmission by 2030. But of course, with the pandemic, with COVID, we saw very significant restrictions on testing in the community, testing in clinical spaces where maybe staff who would have been working in that area were working on COVID. And it limited the opportunity to track the virus. And so we don't know whether the fall that we have seen in the number of cases relates to the fact that there weren't the same opportunities for social interaction and for sexual activity, or whether it was because we're not testing enough. I suspect a large part of it is the latter.
Yeah, and in the context of, say, the last 10 years, have HIV rates been going up or down?
Well, across the world, it fluctuates. And in other countries in the European Union, and I particularly point to maybe in France or even Britain, and of course, they're not in the EU anymore, we're seeing falling rates. But in Ireland, unfortunately, we are seeing, particularly in recent years, rising rates. So in 2019, we had the highest ever incidence of HIV in Ireland that was recorded. And we had something like 530 odd cases. And that's too high. That's too many. And we don't want to see cases rising, because we have all the tools we need to stop it from rising.
And what would you ascribe that to, an increase in cases?
I think it's a lot of things. I think we've only recently introduced a program around pre-exposure prophylaxis. And so this is medication that somebody can take to prevent them from acquiring HIV. And in other countries where those programs have unfolded, we are seeing a reduction in cases. We've only started to do that as a national program. And because, with the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, it was disrupted. We would expect to see that have an impact on rates. I mean, the other things are, we need to ensure that people who, you know, are at increased vulnerability to HIV are getting tested, and they need to be getting tested, you know, when they feel they are vulnerable to HIV, so we can put them on effective treatment. So those are the sort of things that need to happen to stop the ever increasing number of cases. And we think we can do it, but we really need to focus our energy.
And with PrEP, what does that, which is the acronym for, what does that involve? Do you have to take medicine regularly?
It's one pill a day that you can take, and basically it stops you from acquiring HIV if you have sex, say without a condom, with somebody who is HIV positive. So it's an absolute game changer in the prevention option. So once upon a time, everything was relying on condoms and condom use. And condoms are still a very important aspect of HIV prevention and other STIs, of course. But PrEP provides a really sort of game, as I said, a game changing opportunity for people to use the medication and to safely have sex without risk of acquiring HIV.
Now, time was, if people are old enough to remember, there effectively was no medication you could take if you were HIV positive. And then it was like baskets of drugs almost. Nowadays, what do people take if they're living with it?
Well, back to the pill a day situation. A person who is on antiretroviral treatment can take one pill a day, and that pill will constitute effective treatment for HIV. And when somebody is on effective treatment for HIV, it will reduce the level of HIV in their system to an undetectable level. And in those situations, a person can live a long life expectancy, a normal life expectancy. They can live a healthy life, free from being impacted by HIV. And crucially, when they are on effective treatment, this one pill a day, they and they are virally suppressed, they cannot, and I mean cannot, pass on HIV to a partner during sex. So that's another incredible development.
Which is a great thing. To a certain extent, the fact that there is PrEP, that there is a one-pill treatment for HIV, might that perhaps be a partial explanation why rates have gone up in the past? Because almost people think, it's no biggie now.
I think what we need to do is educate people. I think we used to talk about HIV in much more detail. It was a much more prevalent, even in discussion. And of course, we are all experts in this country on COVID-19. I mean, you could ask anybody about R numbers or transmission rates or, you know, anything like that, and people would know. We don't talk about HIV in the same way. So the question is, are younger people as familiar with the HIV and the vulnerability to HIV as we were in the past? That might be really where the answer lies. What are we doing to ensure that we are talking about HIV, that we are preventing HIV, that we are using the available tools? We really probably need to do a lot more.
Why isn't there a vaccine to it?
Well, there is work on vaccines, and that work is ongoing. And some of the work that's been done on the COVID vaccine around mRNA vaccination is contributing to the development or the hopeful development of a vaccine for HIV. But we are not there yet. Some drug companies have undertaken clinical trials. Those trials haven't been successful. You would expect that as technology advances and as our knowledge increases, there is potential for the development of a HIV vaccine in the future. Right now, we are dependent on the medication, the treatment, and the prevention options, which do provide us with an opportunity to end HIV transmission.
Yeah, but you'd think that would kill 35 million people around the world and still no vaccine. And COVID probably hasn't killed that amount of people.
I don't know the numbers. The COVID numbers, I do know that the numbers for HIV are astonishingly high. And in other parts of the world where access to medication is not as frequent, where, you know, there are barriers to accessing testing, there are barriers to accessing treatment, there are barriers to PrEP, you know, we are still seeing people dying from AIDS-related illnesses. And that's unacceptable in a time when we have these effective treatments and effective preventions. So, you know, the vaccine, we'd be very hopeful of a vaccine. I know there's also discussion around and research around, you know, the cure, and we tend not to talk about that, you know, until we really see something tangible. But there are different advances being made. What I will say is that treatment and those prevention options really do signify extraordinary advances already. And it has taken a long time. It has been with us for 40 years. But we do expect, with the will, with the political will, and with medical advances, that we could, if everybody played their part, end new HIV transmissions.
Yeah. I don't need to tell you this, and people who are old enough will remember from the 80s, there was so much ugliness connected to HIV. It was the gay plague and all that kind of stuff. Does that stigma still exist, even if it's in a small part?
It does. Very, very unfortunately, it does. And it does play into the fact that people, you know, don't access the prevention options they need. But if you're living with HIV, very often you will find that a person who is living with HIV will not share their status. And that is because of the stigma attached to HIV that still exists. And it's a barrier. It's a barrier for people entering the workplace. It's a barrier for people entering relationships. It's a barrier for people, you know, participating in society in the way they would like or they should. Because there's so much fear and misinformation and lack of awareness around HIV, HIV has changed. And a person, as I said, living with HIV can live a perfectly healthy life at no risk to anybody else. And that is where we are with HIV. But we just haven't eliminated that stigma yet. And it's a blight. And it really can impact the person's mental health and well-being, and it's something we really need to change.
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, today is World AIDS Day. Apart from doing interviews with Aegis like me, Stephen, what's happening around today?
Well, loads of things are happening. So we've been running a Glow Red for World AIDS Day campaign, and we've been asking buildings all around the country to light up in red to signify their support for World AIDS Day and for people living with HIV. And we've had huge success. Last night, we had the US Embassy in Balls Bridge lighting up in red. We had the Convention Centre. We've had city halls in Cork and Dublin and Limerick and Galway. We've had the Rock of Cashel lighting up in red for another one. So many buildings have done it, and it's been fantastic to see. We're asking people to wear red today to signify their support for HIV. And there's more information on our website at hivireland.ie. And tonight, Panty Bliss, who everybody would know, is hosting an exhibition at CHQ in Dublin of portraits of people living with HIV. And it's, and an event like this is really important because these are people who are living with HIV, who are willing to have their portrait photo taken and displayed in a public place. And that itself is a stigma buster. And so we're really, really excited about that event tonight. And tickets are still available.
Yeah. And the whole blood transfusion issue, that's still an ongoing one.
It is. It is. At the moment in Ireland, if you are a man who has had sex with another man in the past 12 months, you are deferred from giving blood. It used to be a lifetime ban, and that ban was changed to a 12-month deferral in 2017. We know that the Irish Blood Transfusion Service are reviewing, they're undertaking a social behaviours review. So they're reviewing the criteria for blood donations again. And we're hopeful that the ban will change again, because really what we want to do with blood donations, blanket bans are discriminatory and they're not necessary. The technology now and the way that the blood is screened from donors by the IBTS, there's a very, 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 very fractional chance that HIV or other STI would make it into the blood supply. And so based on that, the Blood Transfusion Service can change the criteria. And we're hopeful that they will do that. I know a recommendation is due very, very soon. And to be in line with other European blood donation facilities and to take a more evidence-based approach to the criteria. So again, you know, that has changed. Technology has changed. Screening for blood products has changed, and to make it safe. And everybody wants to ensure the safety of the blood supply, but we want that done on an evidence-based approach.
Stephen, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was Stephen O'Hare there, Executive Director of HIV Ireland.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.